This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's a brand new week. It's Monday, September 16th, 2019. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. WBBM News Time, 12:04. The United Auto Workers Union is on strike against General Motors. We'll get the latest in our next segment. But right now, top of mind and topping our news on the business hour, world energy markets are reacting to the attack on a major oil processing facility in Saudi Arabia over the weekend. We welcome in Phil Flynn, who is a senior market analyst for the Price Group and a Fox Business News contributor based in Chicago. Phil, welcome back to the program. Oil prices jumping more than 10% today following that drone attack against Saudi oil fields over the weekend. In the history of oil price spikes, where does this fall in recent memory?
In real barrels, it's absolutely the largest disruption we have ever seen. Bigger than the Iran-Iraq war, you know, bigger than the oil embargo of the 1970s. We have changed a lot since those events have happened in the global economy, right? The U.S. economy isn't nearly as dependent on foreign oil as it was before. In fact, now we're a net oil energy exporter. The world is not is consuming a lot more oil than it did back then. You know, it's, you know, so as a percentage of daily consumption, we're in a world where we're consuming almost 100 million barrels of oil a day. It makes it look a little smaller. I'm not trying to downplay the attacks. It is historic. It is significant. But thank goodness, because of the U.S. energy producers, we're able to withstand this type of a drawdown.
Now, we live in a world, recently there's been a lot of discussion about the U.S. economy and also the world economy being on a rather shaky footing because of trade tensions all over the world. Can the economy both in the United States and globally absorb this kind of shock?
I think it can. I think we're better equipped here in the United States than we ever have been to handle this because of the shale revolution and the U.S. oil producers. The global economy is a little bit more shaky, but there is a lot of things that are causing, you know, the slowdown in the global economy. The one thing I will say is that right now the global economy is seeing a lot of stimulus being kicked in ahead of time. You know, the global central banks haven't waited around. You're seeing historic stimulus in Europe. They've gone to quantitative easing. You're seeing stimulus, of course, come in from the United States with lower rates and China. Now, my take on the global economy is it's not as bad as people have been saying. You know, in fact, we were pretty optimistic that all the stimulus was really going to give the economy a boost, energy a boost. You know, obviously that could change. You know, if you get the price of oil, you know, spiking, you know, 10% a day, you're going to have a problem. Hopefully we won't get to the point where that will happen, though.
Very quickly, how is that historic run-up in the price of crude oil, how is that going to manifest itself at the gas pump?
I would run and fill your tank today, Rob. Get home, fill your gas cans. It's definitely going to impact what you pay. You know, early guesstimates from this point is anywhere from, you know, 10 to 20 cents a gallon. I'm sure here in Chicago it'll be probably more than that. So, yeah, I definitely think this is going to impact prices. How bad and how long remains to be seen. You know, relatively speaking, gas prices are cheap. But if this disruption goes on for a long time, you're going to feel it in your pocketbook.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Phil Flynn, senior market analyst for the Price Group and Fox News business contributor based in Chicago.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Nearly 50,000 members of the United Auto Workers Union are walking picket lines today, shutting down production at General Motors plants around the country. Let's discuss the impact and the prospects for a settlement with Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, welcome to the program. The last GM strike 12 years ago lasted just 2 days, but it cost the company a whole lot of money. Does this strike look like it's going to have a similar resolution, or are both sides getting ready to dig in for a long time?
You know, it's interesting. I talked to two analysts today. One of them said she thinks it'll be over quickly. The other one says it could drag on for a long time. And what that tells you is, hey, we can't pick stocks either. So who can tell you what actually will happen? But right now, it looks like it's probably going to last a lot longer than the 2 days, but I don't think it's going to drag on more than a couple of weeks. But, you know, these things have a life of their own.
Now, tell us a little bit about the United Auto Workers leadership. Are they kind of Walter Reuther-esque firebrands, or are they a little more practical and are want to get their workers back to the job line?
Well, it's interesting. After a disastrous strike in 1998 against GM and Flint that shut down the whole company and cost workers a lot of money, they were off the job for almost 2 months, the two sides really did mend fences and start to work closely together. But what we've seen over the last few contracts is it's been harder and harder to get a contract ratified. Some contracts have been rejected. The other ones have been a close margin. So a lot of analysts felt that a strike might be coming this year, just so workers who had never been on strike could feel what it's like to be on strike and feel what it's like to have that uncertainty, and that would make them a little more likely to vote for whatever is actually worked out at the bargaining table.
And this is the first strike for a post-reorganization General Motors after the bailout and nationalization 10 years ago. How has that company changed, and how is that changing their approach to this strike?
It's changed a lot. Many years ago, remember the old expression, what's good for General Motors is good for the country? GM back then was the biggest company in the world, not just biggest car company, biggest company, period. Well, it's not even close now. In fact, when it comes to numbers of employees, Ford and Fiat Chrysler have more UAW members than General Motors does. So this is not going to have the widespread effect on the economy that a GM strike would have had in the past. It'll have an effect on suppliers who work with GM, on companies in towns where there are GM plants, but the rest of the country will go on functioning as normal, and it will probably be a blip on the economic scale.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter in Detroit, thanks for joining us this afternoon on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, a preview of this week's key economic reports and events.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A report on manufacturing in the New York region is out today, while the week ahead will include a two-day meeting of the Fed and important data from the housing sector. We're joined now by Tom Hudson, the week ahead columnist for McClatchy Tribune News Services based in Miami. Tom, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about that New York Fed factory gauge, which is slumped in a big way. And is that a sign of trouble a-brewing for the larger economic picture, or is this just really a reflection of the trade uncertainty with China?
Well, I think a little bit of both, Rob. It just adds more evidence that the manufacturing space in the United States is pretty soft, and the business investment side of things, which is really what the Federal Reserve is concerned about, continues to be a problematic place when looking at the U.S. economy. We know that manufacturers especially have been in this area of uncertainty, driven no doubt by the trade tariff war between the Trump administration and the Beijing government in China. And this Empire State Manufacturing Index that came out earlier today was weak. So it just adds more evidence for the Federal Reserve as the policymakers sit down this week that they are right to be concerned about business investment in the United States, number one, and they're right to be concerned about global growth, number two.
Now, this is just a report on manufacturing in New York State itself.
Right.
How representative is New York State of the broader manufacturing picture?
Well, it's a window, right? So it's a little bit like looking at a baseball game through some binoculars. You only see what comes into your field of vision, but you are wise to kind of look at the trends about what is happening. So, yeah, it's just a small snapshot. It's certainly only 1 month and in a relatively small piece of the manufacturing economy, but it just adds evidence that we've seen with these purchase management orders, with weakness in months past, as well as just generally the softness that is involved with the business investment side of the economy that the Federal Reserve has picked up on in months past as well.
And what's that going to mean when the Open Market Committee meets later this week?
25 bips, right? Quarter point is what the market generally expects. I think it's already baked in right now. It would be a shock if the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee did something other than cut its target interest rate by a quarter point. That's been expected. I think before the weekend drone attacks in Saudi Arabia on the oil supply, it was a 90% odd priced into the market of a 25% or 25 basis point quarter point cut by the Federal Reserve. So that certainly is what's expected right now. And I think the Federal Reserve doesn't want to do anything to upset the market, certainly given the weekend attack in Saudi Arabia now, just adding to the jitters.
And then very quickly, what can we expect out of the report of existing home sales on Thursday?
Existing home sales have been generally pretty strong, and pricing has been strong as well. What the Federal Reserve is doing is counteracting, helping in the existing housing market because those mortgage rates have been continuing to drop, and that has spurred on not only some purchase activity but also refinancing.
Thanks a lot, Tom Hudson, Week Ahead columnist for McClatchy Tribune News Services based in Miami, Florida.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio. WBBM drug maker Purdue Pharma files for bankruptcy as part of a settlement with states over the cost of the opioid crisis. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of ideas from an investing pro. There are flooding concerns as the Fox River and Chena Lakes crest following recent heavy rains. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia blaming Iran for a weekend attack on a major oil-producing facility. WBBM Business, the markets are lower this morning. I should say this afternoon, the Dow is down 129 points. The NASDAQ is down 29. The S&P 500 is down 10. AccuWeather says clouds breaking for sun at times, remaining humid. A high this afternoon of 78. Right now in Chicago, we have 73 degrees at O'Hare, 71 at Midway, 66 at the lakefront. WBBM News Time, 12:31. Markets are in the red today. We're joined by Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management based in Chicago. Paul, welcome to the program, and the markets Dow down by over 100 points, and there's only one real reason as to why, which is this drone attack on a Saudi oil field over the weekend. Now, Paul, we've discussed a number of exterior shocks to the economy and the financial markets over the course of the noon business hour. It's almost 20-year history, and there seems to be a definite process, almost like the stages of grief, these stages of the market reaction whenever something like this occurs. And what stage are we in right now?
We're in the initial knee-jerk reaction phase, if you will, of kind of shock that something like this happened, although this is the fifth or sixth time that we've had this incident occur. This one is a lot more damaging than any of the prior ones. So the knee-jerk reaction always is, you know, sell equities, buy the dollar, buy treasuries, in this case, buy oil, because we're going to have a little bit of an impact on world supplies. And I would anticipate that over the course of the week, then, that will settle down and we kind of get back to what passes for business as normal.
The price shock for West Texas Intermediate and Brent crude up by double-digit factors, and we had another analyst on earlier this hour who said this might be the largest one-day oil price spike in history. How is the economy at large going to absorb all of this?
I think it will over time, and it's not. You'll see it at the pump probably in the next week or two. You're going to notice that the prices jump, which is historically the norm when we see prices for Brent jump as well. But when you take a look at where all the production is coming from, a lot of it is coming from the U.S. So we do still import some, not nearly as much. It is a little bit more of an issue for world energy prices, but not as much for the U.S. So we're not doing as much importing of oil. It doesn't have the same impacts that it used to, say, 20, 30 years ago. So, yes, it's going to have an impact. It's not going to be tremendous. We'll see it probably in about 2-3 months showing up in the inflation data, and I'm guessing that the Fed is going to look at it and say it's transitory, it's not permanent, and it probably will not have an impact on their decision whether to either raise rates or cut rates.
Well, the near-term impact, at least on individual stocks, airlines and cruise lines, their share prices fell because they will be definitely impacted by the rising price of oil. However, the energy sector, their price went up today because the price of oil is going up. If you want to make a play either in the energy sector or in the transport sector, how would you go about doing that today?
Well, yeah, today it's kind of hard because you're jumping into the breach. And, you know, is this going to persist? Are we going to see higher oil prices going from 60 now to 70 over the next couple of weeks? So then you would buy the ExxonMobils or the Chevrons. The refineries have been hurt because of higher energy prices. That will hurt their margins. So if you think that energy prices may back off from this, then you would go to those parts of the market that, as you highlighted, were hurt a little bit, some of the transportation stocks, some of the trucking companies. You take a look at the cruise lines. So I hate doing it on a day like today. You kind of sit back and wait for the dust to settle a little bit and see what type of an environment we're in. If this is going to be something that persists, then it does make sense to increase your energy exposure. And it's one of the smallest parts of the S&P 500 as well. So it can have a very large move if money starts to really flow into that sector.
And that's before you even talk about the United Auto Workers strike at General Motors. So in terms of the size and scope of the news cycle, Paul, Monday has been quite a week.
Yeah, it's been a big one. We haven't even talked about the Fed yet, which is later on this week. So you know, we've set the table very well for the entire week, and I anticipate that really the Fed meeting, the press conference afterwards, is going to be really going to be the part that is going to have the opportunity to move the markets more so than the release of what they decide to do, which in all likelihood is going to be a 25 basis point cut.
And then meanwhile, let's pick up an old plot line. China, it looks like their economy is showing signs of slowing down as well.
Yeah, and that's been something that's been going on for a while. And some of the reason why many think that's part of the reason that they have extended maybe an olive branch to the United States and said, okay, maybe we'll buy some agricultural products. Maybe we'll back off on some of this if you back off a little. So the rhetoric has gotten a little softer. And that may be part of the reason why, because they do need the export market of the United States. And we've seen that kind of slow down here a little bit, and trade certainly globally slowing down because of the tariffs that are being imposed.
Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management, based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us in the Noon Business Hour this afternoon. Coming up next, the company blamed for fueling America's opioid crisis files for bankruptcy.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Purdue Pharma, which made billions of dollars selling the prescription painkiller OxyContin, has filed for bankruptcy. Let's learn more about the move from Jeff Feely, reporter for Bloomberg News based in Wilmington. Jeff, welcome to the program. What are some of the details here in this bankruptcy filing? Do they escape legal liability for their role in the opioid addiction and overdose death crisis?
Yeah, the filing has been made to facilitate a proposed settlement that would turn over control of the company from the Sackler family to the cities, counties, and states that have sued, who are seeking to get compensation or reimbursement for public monies they've spent combating the opioid crisis. The contours of the deal would be that the assets of the company would be turned over to a trust that would operate the company on behalf of the governments, and the Sackler family itself would guarantee to pay $3 billion, probably mostly through the sale of an overseas drug maker. The result of this, if it's approved by a bankruptcy judge, is that more than 2,000 suits against the company and the family would be wiped out as part of the settlement.
And that settlement, according to some reports, would be $10 billion plus.
Yeah, it was originally estimated to generate about $12 billion, but I think the valuations have fallen that now the company and the family are projecting that it might generate more than $10 billion.
So in other words, if control of the company is turned over to the entities that are suing it, Purdue Pharma is essentially done.
Purdue Pharma is done as a commercial enterprise in terms of generating billions in profits for the Sacklers. Purdue will operate now and continue to sell OxyContin, which is used in medical procedures to treat pain. And monies generated from continued sales would go to the state, cities, and counties to be used to beef up treatment and policing programs. There's also components in it where the Purdue folks will turn over anti-overdose drugs that may be worth as much as $3 billion. They'll be turned over to cities and states. And so the basic bottom line is that they've handed over the whole thing to the creditors, who are the governments.
And how about the other companies that were in the business of selling opioid-based painkillers? How are they watching and reacting to this deal as it's unfolding?
I think the companies probably see Purdue as somewhat of a one-off, given that it was one of the main bad actors in this crisis, and it was also one of the smaller companies financially. Other folks, some experts are saying that basically this $10 billion deal will sort of be the floor for other settlements by companies. Analysts have said that the two dozen companies that are involved in the opioid segment of the pharmaceutical business may have to come up with as much as $150 billion to resolve all the suits against them.
And then, Jeff, very quickly, how does this stack up to the tobacco settlement of 20 years ago?
Well, we don't know how it's going to stack up at this point, but these companies, these defendants, do not have the money that tobacco companies had. If you recall, tobacco companies in 1998 reached a roughly $246 billion settlement with the states. Very little of that got to the cities and counties, which is what prompted them to sue this time around on opioids, because they felt like they didn't get their fair share of tobacco money, so they're going to make sure they get their fair share of opioid money. I doubt that we're going to get to $150 billion. If this total settlement reaches $100 billion, I would be surprised.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Jeff Feely, reporter for Bloomberg News based in Wilmington, Delaware. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and helping us out this afternoon is Chris Everett, financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions based in Forest Park. Chris, welcome back to the program. You have two selections for us this week, and both of them are funds. And tell us about the first one.
Sure, that's great, Rob. Both are also from the financial sector and sport very attractive PEs and dividends. So if you love efficiency and are looking for top-rated stocks that pay high dividends, plus have increased those dividends in each of the last 5 years, here we go in alphabetical order. Let's start with ABR, Arbor Realty Trust. They invest in a diversified portfolio of structured finance assets in multifamily as well as commercial real estate markets, primarily investing in related bridge and mezzanine loans, including junior participating interests, first mortgages, and also direct equity. So lovely, lovely firm that has excellent solvency, great dividend. If we look at the share price right now, it's trading at $12.82 and sports just north of a 9% dividend, with a P.E. ratio of just 9.25. So it's really attractively priced. I think it's undervalued and could really go a long way.
And then moving along in alphabetical order.
Next one would be SCM. Now, SCM is Stellus Capital Investment. This is a business development company, and they invest primarily in private middle market companies. They do first, second liens, unit tranches, and mezzanine debt financing, but also often with a co-investment equity position. Excellent solvency, excellent dividend. And if you look at the share price of SCM today, we're looking at $13.66, sporting just north of a 10% dividend. P.E. ratio, 8.38. Lovely, lovely firm. Very undervalued, I think.
So once again, we have the Arbor Realty Trust, the symbol ABR, and then Stellus Capital Investment Corp, SCM. And why I got you here for another 60 seconds, what are some of the businesses that Stellus Capital Investment Corp, what are they involved in?
Stellus Capital is really doing private middle market companies. And what's so pretty cool about them, too, is they just got another deal from the Small Business Administration. So now they have access to up to $175 million of attractive long-term debt capital. You know, it's really going to be great for them. Anytime you can keep good debt cost and lock it down for a while, that's a good thing.
Well, you know what they say, good debt is hard to find. Chris Everett, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions based in Forest Park. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.